Centre for Public Christianity. You're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Simon Smart.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
It's not as familiar as it used to be, but there are some iconic scenes that we all still associate with Christmas. A pregnant woman riding a donkey, a baby born in a barn full of animals, shepherds startled by a host of singing angels, and of course, wise men following the bright glow of a faraway star.
Come closer to Joseph. Come right up to him. Don't be scared of him.
This year, the kids from Churchill Anglican in Sydney are bringing this story to life and putting on a nativity play, Born is the King, written by Laurel Moffat. And we're at one of the dress rehearsals.
Hi, Joseph. What you doing?
I'm just doing a cradle for no apparent reason.
In this scene, Mary is trying to tell Joseph that she's pregnant with baby Jesus. But Joseph, he doesn't seem to be getting it.
You never know, Joseph. It could come in handy in about 9 months.
What? Does this mean?
Yeah!
You have a friend who is having a baby?
No, I am going to have a baby. The Son of God Most High. We will call him Jesus and he is the forever king. Surprise! I am having a baby.
I think I need someone else.
For such a well-worn story, this play is a fresh, meaningful, sometimes humorous take on the nativity. And the writer, Laurel, manages to sneak in a few modern twists and surprises as well.
We'll get to all of that in a moment. First, when we spoke to Laurel in our studio, we asked her how she, a person with a PhD in Shakespeare, was inspired to write a nativity play for children.
Well, each year at Christmas, our church has a service, a Christmas service on Christmas Eve that is especially for children and families. And so I started looking around for some material for a play or a service that would somehow allow the kids to take part, but still have it so that people who came to a service could sing carols. Because we've found each year people really like singing Christmas carols.
Who doesn't?
They're good. They're great. They're some of the best songs we know and have. Right. And we get to play them and sing them each year. Yeah. So we didn't want to lose the carols, but we wanted something that included the children in a drama. And I couldn't find one that I really liked, so I wrote one.
The really liked must be the important bit here.
There's tons of material out there. Yes.
Okay, so you thought you'd work on one yourself. Now,
yes.
Nativity plays aren't as common perhaps as they once were, and they are also to some degree controversial. What do you think about the place of the nativity story in schools and churches and other places?
As a Christian, this story is the reason why I'm a Christian. But this story is, everything pivots on it for me. So it's a powerful story, but it's a great story. Like, it's a whole series of scenes that are just bizarre and delightful and kind of hilarious and wonderful. And to ban it from even our secular places is a real shame, because I think it's one of the best stories. Well, actually, it's the best story we have.
So you had a bit of a trial run last year.
Yes.
It was performed in a couple of places.
Yes, it was.
What was that like for you to see kind of your words come to life on the stage?
It was a little bit terrifying because kids are really amazing critics. And if a line doesn't go right, they will tell you. In fact, I got lots of suggestions and I did incorporate them because lines that didn't seem to work, a kid would be like, can we just say it this way? And I was like, oh, that's so much better. So it was great to actually, it was a real privilege actually to work with the children at my church. It was a privilege that they were willing to use it, and it was a privilege that the kids really took it on. And had a lot of fun. It was just fun. It was weeks and weeks of fun. And they got the seriousness of the message as well. So it was fun. It was meaningful. And then a much larger church used it as well. And they said it went really well too. So they just, you know, you have more angels and you have more shepherds and you you have more, but only one Jesus.
That's the important part.
That's right.
So this is a story that we kind of all think we know, and you see it around the place. But as you kind of mentioned earlier, it is quite bizarre and unexpected in lots of ways. Does the play kind of try to bring that out, the weirdness of this?
A little bit. It does. I think it touches on things and the interruptions, because the story, the news keeps being told over and over, first to Mary, who's expecting Jesus, unexpectedly. And then Joseph, also, who's going to get married to Mary. But this is a little wrench, in fact, a big wrench in those plans. And then the shepherds who are trying to sleep. And then wise men who are used to, I would think, charting stars, looking at stars but not following them. Everything's a little bit strange, but it touches on it lightly.
The time has almost come for Jesus, our King, to arrive. Right here in this tiny room in Bethlehem. I know, it's not really where you would expect a king to be born. Maybe we expect something a little grander for a king. Not all this straw, this dirt, this earth. But God has a way of making something unexpected, something beautiful, something good.
I mean, this story gets pegged as a story for the kids. But is that an accurate assumption? I mean, some of the best kids' stories speak most powerfully to the adults who are reading them to the kids, for instance.
Mm. Well, I think the best stories have to capture the imagination of a child. But those best stories, I think, that do capture that imagination inevitably capture an adult's imagination as well. I think some of our best stories are the simplest. Some of our best words are the simplest words that we have. And simple is good. I don't see a simple story as losing any power. In fact, I think often the power can come through something so simple and so universal. I mean, have a woman having a baby, that's universal. That's all over the world, and it's happened since forever. But this is different. This story is unique. And I guess it's, you know, very average setting, backwater town, small towns, traveling, discomfort. The people that you wouldn't expect, like shepherds, these aren't courtiers. This isn't a court. It's not a palace. So there's, I think, for each kind of scene or each moment in the nativity story, there are surprises. And there are your expectations, I think, if you read it closely and you read it over and over again, because I think the actors who compiled Shakespeare's first folio, it's like if you don't understand it, read it again. And I think that's timeless advice. You know, the more you read it, the more you get surprised, I think, by it.
Yeah, and that's a interesting thing, because at one level this story can be so sentimentalized that it loses its power. But on the other hand, it can become so familiar that it loses its power. But you're urging people to kind of look again at it.
I think so. I keep getting surprised by it. I think for each of the people who receive this news, there's something to learn from their response. There's something to learn from the way that Mary hears this news that, for the culture of the time, it could mean being ostracized by your community. It would mean that you don't have the security of a husband. But she accepts it, and she, with beautiful humility. And then Joseph, who really, I mean, he wants to divorce her. He's like, okay, I'll just, you know, I'll make nice, we'll get married, but then quiet divorce, get it done, we'll go to Vegas, just get this over with. But then he's able, through, I guess, hearing the news and God interrupting him, even in his sleep, to, again, with humility, accept the news and then do the thing that needs to happen, which is to take care of Mary and this baby. And then the shepherds, I would have thought the shepherds would think, what in the world are we doing? Like, why are you coming to us? They're scared. They could easily imagine that they'd have no place at the side of a king.
Yeah, but shepherds aren't typically kind of the movers and shakers of a society.
Yeah, no, they're hardly ever in Renaissance portraits of courtly life. Yeah. I haven't seen many, but yet they're the first, you know, the first people told, and that's just surprising and wonderful.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. We're speaking with Laurel Moffat about her nativity play, Born is the King. Here's a little more from the rehearsal.
You could kind of
He's here. Now, God with us, our true and forever King, the King of sheep and of shepherds, of stars and stargazers, of crowded inns and small spare rooms, and journeys and destinations,
And to one such as this, what do we say?
Born is the king, true and forever king.
Together we say,
born is the king, our true and forever king.
Our true and forever king indeed.
Now, in your play, there we weave in these elements of the modern world. You get the angel Gabriel presenting Mary with an ultrasound. Yes. That's how he tells Mary she's pregnant. And Joseph, when he finds out she's pregnant, thinks about getting a quickie divorce by the stroke of a stylus.
This is hard news for Joseph to bear. Perhaps he could get out of his promise to Mary. Or maybe a quiet divorce. Just a little scroll work, a stroke of a stylist. He would never have to think about it again. Mary would just be this girl he loved once.
Do those sorts of touches reflect a broader commitment to the idea that this ancient story has something to say to today?
Yes, and I tried to use humor as well as things that would translate easily in our life now. And like with the ultrasound picture, yes, it's a picture. It's a cartoon that I drew, but it has, the baby has a name tag. It says, "Hello, my name is Jesus," which surprisingly you can see on the ultrasound, and a pointy little crown to say that he's a king.
Children,
yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, he did come with a name. Mm-hmm. So, but I tried to use humor as well, lightly, because I do think that humor, when used well, can delight an audience, and it can unite both children and adults through laughter, but also kind of make you more willing to hear, I guess, or listen, because it's fun.
Laurel, is there someone in this story, is there a character or a group of characters in this story that particularly resonate with you?
I think it changes each year as I read the story again and again, but definitely through writing the play, I guess in the years leading up to it, I had done a lot of thinking about Mary and what it must have felt like or been like to get this news. But of late, I keep thinking about the wise men, that the news prompts them to go. Like, they move. They travel. It makes them do something. And so I keep thinking about them.
So let's start that from the beginning, Angel.
Greetings, shepherds.
Bah.
Bah. Bah. Don't be afraid. We have good news. The king is here. The forever king. He's here.
Bah.
What does a king have to do with us? We're just shepherds.
Such a small word. Just. As if there is such a thing as just anybody.
Silly shepherds. Don't you know that the forever king, the son of God Most High, has everything to do with you? For he is your true shepherd. Just as you care for your sheep, he cares for you.
You have this great line in the play where the shepherds are asking, you know, what does a king have to do with us? We're just shepherds. And Gabriel says, such a small word, just, as if there is such a thing as just anyone. I mean, there's a lot of meaning behind that, isn't there?
Yes. And I think when I wrote that, I was thinking about the shepherds, how they would be just, they could be perceived as nobodies, but also thinking about Jesus, who came as a nobody. He did not come in a way that made you think, oh, there's the king. He came, he was baby first and grew up. But the fact that he was king from forever and he arrived. And that is ultimate humility. But also I was thinking in a way that it's easy to write them all off as nobodies. And it's easy to write anyone off as a nobody. Yes, there's the shepherds who are the unexpected first worshippers of the king. But also there's Mary and Joseph who've traveled and can't find a home. They're almost like refugees. There's Jesus who was born to an unwed mother, or at least that's the news at first, and adopted by Joseph. So it just seems like throughout the story, we keep being reminded that God uses the unexpected. He uses people you don't expect. He uses places you don't expect. He turns your expectations upside down and surprises you over and over and over again. And it's a surprise that seems to compel people to do something and to not just listen. I mean, this is the opposite of clickbait. It's this is not like scrolling, oh, that's neat. You know, it draws you in. It compels you.
And I suppose, you know, central to the Christian faith is this idea that God himself takes on the form of a human, and that really validates what it is to be a human. Like if God himself would, you know, stoop to be one, that you can't ever like write off a human being.
No. You can't.
As a human being.
That's right. I think that the, well, I guess it's what we call the incarnation, where God becomes human or flesh, takes on flesh. That very act makes you realize that you can't take any human for granted or take advantage of any human, no matter how small, no matter how old, no matter how frail. Yeah, no matter how lost or dispossessed, that everyone has value.
From the Centre for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with me, Simon Smart, and Natasha Moore. We hope you've enjoyed our chat with Laurel Moffat about her nativity play, Born is the King. If you wanted to purchase her play to use at your school, your church, or your theatre group, you can find it at citytocityaustralia.org.au.
This is actually our last episode of Life and Faith for 2016, and we want to thank all of you for listening. If you want to catch up on any shows from this year, they're all available on our website, publicchristianity.org, or on iTunes. Just type Life and Faith in the search box to find us. While you're there, feel free to leave us a rating or review. It helps us out and helps other people to find our show as well.
Before we go, though, we wanted to leave you with some very special Christmas messages from some of the kids in Laurel's play. First up, Louisa. She's 11. She's playing the role of Mary.
She's Jesus's mother. Yeah. I think I like the line where Mary says that she will like accept it, like where she, the line where it says, God is the one who takes fear and turns it into gladness, who takes tears and turns them into songs, that bit. Because it's like all serious, but then a little bit at the end is kind of funny because it just says, surprise, I'm having a baby. I think it's important to remember the Christmas story because so you know that it's not Christmas is not just about getting presents and giving presents and eating lots of food. And that the real reason is Jesus, not just presents. And Christmas trees and yeah, and it's not just about family, but it also is sort of about family as well.
And here's Ella. She's 9. She plays one of the shepherds.
So the line is, a king, what does the king have to do with us? We're just shepherds. And we're just like, what does the king have to do with us? Because we're just shepherds, we just look after our sheep. That's what we do all day. I think they would have felt scared because the angel may have given them a shock. Excited to see the new baby. It's important to tell everyone that don't know Jesus the story of Christmas so they can maybe start believing in Jesus.
Last but not least, here's Oliver.
My role is the angel Gabriel. He's pretty much the messenger of God telling the shepherds and Mary and Joseph and the wise men that Jesus is coming and he's the king. I like the poem at the end. It's the one whom Mary welcomed, the one whom Joseph raised, the one the shepherd followed, the one the wise men praised, the one who came and met us in the frailness of our earth, the one who in his death gives us a second birth. That's my favorite line. It's just like how it all rhymes and it fits together really nice, and it sort of just sums up the whole story of Christmas.
And from all of us here at CPX, we wish you a very Merry Christmas. Join us again next year for more conversations about life and faith. We'll see you then.